The Utter Silence of the Untranslated Stars by Cerulean. Read for you by Dana Scully, 1013. This story is rated teen and up, and no archive warnings apply. It features the pairing Lan Huan, Lan Si Chen, Song Lan, Song Zi Chen, and additional tags include Alternate Universe, Space, Alternate Universe, Science Fiction, Hurt Comfort, Non-Graphic Descriptions of Injuries, Passing Mention of Cybernetic Augmentation, and Hands Predictably Touching Hands. It's been half a decade since Song Lan has flown on a long-haul commercial transport. He isn't fond of the military and how they stick their fingers into his work, but an undeniable perk of the job is that when he has to travel, he can do it without being crammed into a too small ship with uneven gravity generation and every sticky-fingered child in the galaxy. Military pilots are insane, but Song Lan will never say another word against any of them after three jumps executed with a delicacy that left his teeth falling loose in his gums. By that third jump, there is no part of Song Lan that doesn't hurt. Granted, the most insistent hurts are the ones he brought with him. Song Lan doesn't make a habit of looking into mirrors, but he intuits the concerned looks of passengers and crew alike to mean that the bruising on his face has bloomed in earnest. And possibly that the lacerations he'd left exposed when the itch of the dressings became unbearable are not looking their best in the stale atmosphere of a budget airline. Song Lan entertains himself with the grim thought that at least this time, people are staring at new injuries, and not the scarring from old ones. If the ship had been unpleasant, the destination is dreadful. They dock with one of the oldest system border stations, one Song Lan has passed through many times, but never through the civilian lane. The passengers are spat out into a terminal that is muggy and crowded, with visible condensation dripping down the walls, leaving grimy streaks. The air tastes like rust and the chemical tang of a filtration system sagging under the weight of a volume of people it was not designed for. Even though the air is hot and thick, the chill of space clings to Song Lan's bones, and he finds himself shivering, each aching breath wrenched from his lungs. He grips the handle of his only luggage, an innocuous black specimen case that could be mistaken for a suitcase, and does his best to protect the worst of his injuries, and grinding his teeth against the pain every time someone knocks into him. Not for the first time, the sheer volume of everything threatens to overwhelm him. The shrieking voices, the barrage of lights, the constant press of people on all sides. A little helplessly, Song Lan stares through the windows into the inhospitable void and reminds himself that, however peaceful it looks, it's not worth the frostbite. Song Lan used to imagine making a home in space. He thought of buying a ship and finding a remote spot to live in, adrift in the silent, cold vacuum. Not a feasible solution to the suffocating crush of civilization. There are practical obstacles to start with. While the synthetic systems that keep Song Lan's heart beating grant him more durability than the average human, even he can't live without air and food and radiation shielding, none of which are in reliable supply once you leave the orbit of a habited planet. But even then, it was never truly an option. Song Lan couldn't leave people behind any more than he could stop breathing. When given the choice, he'd chosen life. A life alone, missing parts of himself he'd thought were vital. But a life regardless. What he's ended up with may not have been what he imagined for himself, but It fits him in unexpected ways. He thinks of the calm, clean air he's used to, of the sterile surfaces of the labs, of the warmth of golden eyes that greet him each day, of careful hands and gentle smiles, of a quiet contentment that seems too fragile to examine closely. It's the sense memory of that warmth which he wanted to come back to so badly that he dragged himself out of a far-flung hospital bed against the advice of doctors. And it's that memory that keeps him moving now. When he makes it out into the main passenger concourse, everything gets impossibly brighter and louder, but there is a little more room, and his broken ribs meet fewer elbows. Small mercies. The trudge through decon processing and customs is grueling. It feels like it takes hours, and it's followed up with a rattling train carriage transfer to the inner rings of the station. Fatigue tugs at every one of Sung Lan's joints, and it still feels like he's breathing ice shards, but he puts one weary foot in front of the other until finally, he finds himself at the entrance to the military terminal that will take him back to Earth. The corporal, stationed at the doors, raises her eyebrows at him for a few moments before Sung Lan's brain catches up with his location, and he fumbles in his pocket for his ID. After glancing at the card and up at Sung Lan's face, she waves him through without comment, not even checking the contents of his luggage. Before the doors slide closed behind him, he hears the corporal say, "Dr. Sung has arrived," followed by the static burst of a radio. Sung Lan sighs and closes his eyes in defeat. He is too tired for this. Too tired and sore and short on patience to deal with whatever procedural bullshit they want to fling at him tonight. He hopes they have an interpreter awake, at least, since his arm is throbbing and the thought of writing makes bile crawl up the back of his throat. But no harried aides intercept him. No escort firmly instructs him to follow them. Sung Lan moves unimpeded through the dark, indifferent halls, and in the first true moment of stillness he's had in days, Sung Lan rests against the wall and just breathes. Which is when the footsteps register, quickly building in speed and volume. But instead of soldiers, Lan Xichen rounds the corner, freezes, and stares at Sung Lan. Sung Lan stares back. In his shock, he fixates on the way Xichen's hair is flat on one side, like he'd been sleeping on it. It's such a stupid, irrelevant detail, but the sight of it unravels a tightly held thread of fondness in Sung Lan, and he finds himself transfixed. Everything about the last 2 weeks, the fiasco with the fuel pump, the nauseating side effects of the drugs, the crowded flight, the fact that Sung Lan hasn't changed his clothes in 6 days, all of that evaporates at the sight of this disheveled man. It makes no sense that Xichen is here in the middle of the night, but Sung Lan can't bring himself to care, because he can already feel the knot of tension that has been clinging to his chest loosen its hold. The shape of Xichen's eyes shifts from searching to agonized as he catalogues every visible cut and bruise. "You're hurt," he says, hand raised as if he wants to press his thumb to the stitched-up cut on Sung Lan's cheek. There is a long, heartbeat-heavy moment where Sung Lan doesn't breathe before Xichen seems to realize what he's doing. He curls his fingers into a fist as he lowers his hand.
"Sorry, of course you are. Your ship exploded."
He unclenches his fist, somewhat deliberately, and Sung Lan watches it, drunk on the relief of familiarity. seat and blinks and shakes his head as if to clear it. I apologize, he says, slipping into the polite tone Sung Lan recognizes from when they first met. I imagine you want to get home, not be interrogated by your colleague. Sung Lan knows, intellectually, that Zi Qian retreats to formality when he's upset, but the sting of the word choice cuts through reason quite effectively. They are more than colleagues, and somewhere beyond friends, but it's nebulous and undefined, so he swallows around the hurt he has no right to. Are these the specimens? Zi Qian reaches for the case. Incredible that you managed to get them back in one piece. I'll take them. Let's go. He smiles, polite and empty, and gestures for Sung Lan to precede him. After an awkwardly long moment, Sung Lan convinces his legs to move, and they set off toward the flight deck. Zi Qian doesn't speak while they walk, which is not unusual. One of the things Sung Lan likes about him is that he doesn't fill silences with pointless words. But the quality of this silence is different. For all that his face is smooth, the line of Zi Qian's shoulders is tense and unhappy. Sung Lan wants to reach out to him, to ask what's wrong. But he just walks in silence too. It doesn't take long for them to reach the shuttle, mysteriously unharassed by anyone in uniform, and if it weren't for the stomach-churning walk across the deck, it would have been entirely without incident. The combined change in air pressure and vertigo from the warped view of the rest of the station through the thick perspex dome of the deck nearly knock Sung Lan to his knees. He makes it to the door of the shuttle before he stumbles, catching himself on a tether hook. Zi Qian takes Sung Lan firmly by the arm and steers him inside to a stack of empty crates that will serve well enough as a seat. He presses one hand briefly to Sung Lan's shoulder and says something quiet that Sung Lan doesn't catch. Sung Lan tries to breathe evenly through his nose and keep what little food he's eaten where it is. Zi Qian returns after a few moments, holding a small plastic box, painted red and white and chipped on the corners. He sets it carefully within reach and sits next to Sung Lan, peering at him with concern.
I'm okay, Sung Lan signs, a little clumsily, so he bolsters it with a reassuring smile that pulls uncomfortably at the sore parts of his face. Zi Qian doesn't look reassured. Instead, he exhales, swallows, and sits back, covering his eyes with a trembling hand. It feels as wrong as the polite smile, and Sung Lan desperately tries to shake off the haze of exhaustion to make sense of what's happening. The man he's worked with for 3 years is calm, composed, and level-headed. Sung Lan has never seen him so much as raise his voice to a student, and he has some that probably need it. But this Zi Qian is barely holding himself together, and it gnaws at Sung Lan. He thinks he might understand. Relief is still shaking through his limbs, and the rush of it is overwhelming. An embarrassing and tactless part of Sung Lan is warmed by the undeniable evidence that Zi Qian is relieved he is safe. But it's more than concern and relief. There is a kind of desperation in him that Sung Lan has never seen before. Whenever anyone joins the Institute, it is inevitably accompanied by a tedious wave of gossip. Sung Lan always ignores it, and he had done so when Zi Qian joined, but even he couldn't miss the pitying tenor of the whispers. Zi Qian had never acknowledged any of the rumors, so Sung Lan had never asked.
If Song Lan noticed the palpable sadness in Si Chen's unguarded moments, he kept it to himself, and Si Chen afforded Song Lan the same courtesy. But now, witnessing these cracks in his composure, Song Lan wonders if this isn't the first time that Si Chen has waited for someone to come home after an accident. The memory of Si Chen's bright and brittle smile when Song Lan had said goodbye takes on an edge of grief that Song Lan hadn't considered before.
"I'm sorry,"
Lan Si Chen says, his fingers still pressed to his temples.
"I haven't had enough sleep, clearly."
Song Lan waits for him to drop his hand, and when he doesn't, Song Lan tugs it away from his face.
"And stop apologizing," he signs, "please."
Si Chen nods apologetically. Song Lan narrows his eyes, which gets him an echo of a smile.
"Thank you for coming," Song Lan signs. "You didn't have to."
Si Chen examines him, eyes finally coming to rest somewhere around Song Lan's clavicle.
"I was worried," he admits, as if it is some great secret and not obvious in every line of his body. "I know you can take care of yourself. That's why you always get sent alone on these jobs. But I..."
He takes another shaky breath and meets Song Lan's eyes.
"It is not a rational impulse, I suppose."
Song Lan would really like to know who taught this man that his feelings have to be rational.
"I'm okay now," he signs. "I made it back." "I'm very glad,"
Si Chen says, quiet and honest. Then he sighs.
"Even if I am astonished they let you fly in this state."
"I didn't give them a choice,"
Song Lan signs. Si Chen shakes his head and, carefully, giving Song Lan time to object to the contact, tilts Song Lan's face to the light.
"I need to clean and dress this," he says, index finger ghosting below the stitches on Song Lan's cheek, and then down to trace the edge of his bottom lip. "I can't do much about your mouth, I'm afraid. Are you hurt anywhere else?"
Song Lan doesn't think that the broken ribs are worth mentioning, but if he pretends there's nothing else, Si Chen will probably insist on a full exam. So he pushes back the sleeve of his jacket to show the chemical burn on his forearm, still beneath the sealed silicone bandage. Si Chen sucks in a breath and gingerly takes Song Lan's hand to examine the burn.
"You should be in a hospital, Song Lan, not jumping across three systems on a commercial flight."
Song Lan can't help the smile that makes the cuts on his lips sting. That was nearly word for word what Dr. Wun had said, although she had been less careful with Song Lan's arm. When Si Chen releases him, eyebrows raised in a question, Song Lan signs,
"That's what my doctor said."
"Well, two doctors have said it now. Perhaps you'll actually listen." Si Chen huffs and pointedly starts pulling out medical supplies. Song Lan misses the fleeting warmth of his fingers.
"You're a botanist,"
Song Lan signs, leaning back and resting his head against the cool metal of the shuttle wall. "And a field medic," Si Chen replies, having somehow caught it without looking.
"With more than enough experience to know that you had to stop taking antibiotics and analgesics once you got on that transport. God knows what that will do to your recovery. Not to mention the cheap sedatives they probably forced you to take so you didn't notice the way their flimsy ships get tossed around during jumps."
I noticed.
Song Lan signs when Si Chen finally takes a breath. He'd felt every grinding rasp of those engines for 6 endless days.
I wanted to come home,
he adds, after a few moments of Si Chen's unimpressed glare. The anger melts from his face, but Song Lan doesn't catch what replaces it because Si Chen looks down again to organize his various crinkling packages and pull on a pair of gloves. He emerges, armed with alcohol wipes, a topical antibacterial agent, and a determined set to his mouth. In contrast, his fingers are gentle as he once again tips Song Lan's face up and sets about cleaning the wound. Song Lan doesn't flinch, but he closes his eyes against the sting and against the intimacy of it. He feels profoundly exposed with the hint of Si Chen's breath against his cheek and nowhere to hide his face. In a misguided attempt at distracting himself, he tries to figure out if his thundering pulse would be visible in his neck. Since he's all in on bad ideas, Song Lan opens his eyes and watches Si Chen instead. An uncharacteristic frown is carved into his brow, and Song Lan wants to reach out to smooth it, and he doesn't know what. Something. Anything to make it go away. Incrementally, the frown eases, and by the time that Si Chen has applied the angry orange liquid to every single cut on Song Lan's face and neck and hands, he seems considerably calmer. Song Lan, on the other hand, is wound tighter than a strangler fig.
Well, Si Chen says, you don't look like you just crawled out of a crash site, but you do still look like you went 3 rounds with a mining mech. I'm not sure it's an improvement. I can't give you anything for the pain. I'm sorry.
He sits back, and Song Lan takes a breath for the first time in what feels like minutes.
Thank you.
Song Lan signs. He's not sure if he's more grateful for the treatment or the space right now. He's running low on restraint, and Si Chen is being so careful. Pulling off his gloves, Si Chen nods and busies himself collecting up the rubbish and repacking the first aid kit. Casually, as if it's nothing, he says,
I brought you a change of clothes. Your clothes, obviously.
Song Lan stares at him. Si Chen clears his throat uncomfortably.
Since you lost your luggage, and I know you don't like...
The end of the sentence is punctuated with a small, undignified huff as Song Lan drags him into a hug. Restraint be damned. After a moment of hesitation, Si Chen curls into Song Lan, exhaling as though he'd just put down something heavy. When Si Chen slips his arms around Song Lan's waist, Song Lan gathers his courage, tries not to let his breathing fall into the uneven pattern of his racing heart, and pulls Si Chen more securely to him, letting his thumb drag through the short crop of hair at the base of Si Chen's neck. It's a perilous kind of encouragement to the bright hope he's kept in check for so long. Not because he doubts Si Chen returns his feelings, but because he knows well that intention, even love, sometimes isn't enough on its own. In a betrayal of his conviction to not let his heart take the wheel, Song Lan's arm convulsively tightens around Si Chen's shoulders, and the hand at his neck threads into his hair. It's difficult to keep reminding himself of the odds of heartbreak when Si Chen is pressed against him, chin tucked over Song Lan's shoulder and hands clenched in the back of Song Lan's jacket. Eventually, Si Chen pulls back, but only far enough to press their foreheads together. Song Lan lets his hand slip from Si Chen's nape to rest at the hinge of his jaw. When Song Lan brushes a thumb over the corner of Si Chen's mouth, he inhales a tiny, sharp breath. And whatever had broken in Song Lan's self-control must have been load-bearing, because it makes perfect sense in that moment to kiss him. Just a brief, sincere press of lips to say the things he can't. Before he can pull back more than a few inches, Si Chen mutters, "Oh, definitely not," and follows Song Lan to kiss him again, insistent and open and entirely unambiguous. It's impossible not to sink into it, to let his hands curl back into Si Chen's hair. It's not earth-shattering, and it doesn't make Song Lan's knees weak, but it quiets something in him, and all of the tension he carried for light years fades. Maybe, with Si Chen, the earth moved slowly, and this is the last piece of it sliding into place. He is still bone-tired, but under Si Chen's hands and lips, the chill leaves his skin, replaced with a lasting heat.
"I have wanted to do that for so long,"
Si Chen whispers into the collar of Song Lan's jacket, where he has tucked himself securely. Song Lan hums in agreement, disinclined to move so he can reply with words. He is confident the message is received by the way Si Chen somehow burrows closer. But because the universe has decided Song Lan is the butt of all jokes this month, they're disrupted by the chirp of an incoming message through the shuttle comms. A distant speaker asks,
"Control to the shuttle Equinox, were you planning to depart tonight?"
Si Chen makes a low noise of distress, but untangles himself, careful of Song Lan's burned arm, and presses a kiss to Song Lan's forehead before disappearing into the cockpit to reply. Song Lan doesn't bother suppressing his smile while he tidies up the mess they'd forgotten about and returns the first aid kit to the niche in the wall. When he turns back, Si Chen is leaning against the door of the cockpit, watching. He reaches out a hand and says,
"Let's go home."
"Home,"
Song Lan signs with a nod and takes Si Chen's hand. It is just as warm as his eyes. The end.